This is the 2 North Jackson Podcast with news, insights, details, and accomplishments from Alabama's 67 county governments. Welcome to the December edition of the 2 North Jackson Podcast. Today, we'll talk about the challenges of state oversight, national leadership, and a conversation with a unique county leader. We'll begin with a conversation with our friend Jeff Arnold, the Jackson County Revenue Commissioner. He is immediate past president of the Association of Alabama Tax Administrators and has been an outspoken advocate for the independence of Alabama's local revenue commissioners. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be with you today, Sonny.
And Jeff, it's an interesting conversation for us to have as we get ready to approach a new year with the legislative session just around the corner. Alabama's revenue commissioners are pretty busy right now. And as I talk to you, I know there's a lot of hectic activity in your office. Could you talk a little bit about what a revenue commissioner's doing on the last few days of the calendar year?
Yes. You know, our deadline's coming up December 31st, and we're trying to get all those taxes in before penalties start. Of course, we have to the end of the year, and then it goes on further with penalties, but it's a very busy time in our offices.
Well, and of course, the activities and duties of your office and your colleagues all over the state is vitally important to county government. Ad valorem tax revenue represents the largest source of operating income in most counties, and your activities go on all year. What's going on right now as the calendar year concludes is just the culmination of a process that begins with assessment. Take us through kind of a general overview of what happens during the course of the year, and then we'll talk a little bit about state oversight of your activities.
So yes, you're right. We're funding those budgets right now. Of course, we're the entity that's in charge of collecting the budgets for everybody, the schools, the county commissions, the cities, the municipalities, the fire departments. And we fund those budgets through our office and disperse those budgets to the proper agencies. But you're right, we never stop. So one year runs into the other, and we've got teams out there appraising and assessing and getting everything set up for the next year. So this goes on. And yes, for our county in particular, our number one source is property tax. So take it very seriously. We have to make sure we're treating everybody fair and equitable. And that's the word you'll hear from me a lot, fair and equitable. That's my job here.
Well, and so the issue that's brought us to our conversation today is a complicated one. And rather than diving into that discussion, I'd really like to talk a little bit about statewide oversight. You were elected by the voters of Jackson County to carry out this important duty, but yet the relationship with the state agency often puts you in a place where there may be directives that come in the form of memos or letters that tell you how to do your job. And why should the taxpayers care if a state agency is essentially superseding the authority of a local elected official?
So yes, and again, like I said, you'll hear this from me a lot, fair and equitable. When I was elected by the people of Jackson County, I did take an oath to collect taxes and to do my job and to remember that the code tells us that we treat everyone fair and equitable. And there's a lot of guidelines in place. Of course, we operate mainly out of Title 40, out of the Code of Alabama. But, you know, there's other publications and there's things from the state, the Alabama Property Tax Plan for Equalization. So when things change, when memos come from the state and things happen, we have to look very closely at that and see where that's coming from. And I've never been one to just do it because I said so. I always want to know why. You know, how does this affect taxpayers? How does this affect our municipality and our children and our schools? And how does this affect someone? If my goal is to treat everybody the same, these memos, these directives allow me to do that? Or do they give somebody an advantage or somebody a disadvantage? So yeah, it's very important, these directives that come from the Department of Revenue to us.
And of course, the Code of Alabama establishes a process for state agencies to follow if they are essentially going to make law. We have separation of powers in Alabama, and the executive branch, and that's what a state agency is, isn't clothed with the power to make law. That rests with the Alabama legislature. The legislature has delegated some of that power to state agencies as long as they follow the Administrative Procedures Act, which allows for input, public hearings, and then oversight by the legislative council. And, you know, more than a year ago, there was an issue that was raised by the Alabama Department of Revenue that you and your colleagues pretty unanimously around the state opposed and took exception to. There was a public hearing held, and then that proposed rule was pulled back by the Department Department of Revenue. And a few weeks later, a memo was sent directing you to carry out the duties that would have been put in the rule. And I know you asked for an AG's opinion about whether or not the agency had the authority to direct you in carrying out your duties and responsibilities to the people of your county.
That's absolutely right. And you said it. We were at that hearing, of course, still looking at COVID things. It was an online hearing, but nevertheless, myself and several other colleagues from the Alabama Association of Tax Administrators were at that hearing and were opposed to it. I mean, we made that very plain that we were opposed to it. And after the hearing, nothing really happened except for, just like you alluded to, this memo came out, which led me to question if this didn't happen in the hearing, should it have been just put in a memo and sent out? So that's what led me to ask for this attorney general's opinion. And I have no problem following procedure. If there's a hearing, and even the day we had that hearing, if the hearing had happened and everything would have passed like it was supposed to have, I guess, I have no problem following the law, you know, following the rules. But that's what led me to ask, if you have a hearing and it doesn't go your way, it kind of seems like you're superseding that with a memo. And that's the question that I asked the AG's office.
And at the county government level, it's concerning to us. It's concerning to us as an association because the revenue commissioner's function dictates whether or not we have enough money to provide law enforcement. Can we keep the court system open? Can we maintain roads and bridges? But in the same vein, the probate judge interacts with the Department of Mental Health and other state agencies. Can those agencies impose their will on the probate judge? Likewise, could the State Department of Corrections, by memo, tell the sheriff how to operate the jail at the local level when the sheriff's elected for that purpose? And so this is one of those issues that's been behind the scenes, but we've been very concerned about it for some time. And then we open up the internet in early October, and the Department of Revenue has posted the property tax plan for equalization that's a couple of hundred pages long and directs you to use that without any notice, right?
That's correct. Yes. Of course, we have analysts that come by and tell us, hey, this is coming. But as far as anything in writing, the first thing I saw was, just like you alluded to, in October, the property tax plan for equalization was changed. And that's my directive to follow.
And that impacts every taxpayer in Alabama that owns property, right?
It does. That's right.
And so as we go forward, the association is working hand in hand with AATA and tax officials all over the state to try to address this issue, not because we don't respect the relationship between the state and the county, but because you got elected to carry out a job and we need to follow procedures, right?
That's correct. I feel like I have to defend these values that I collect on to the citizens of Jackson County. And if I don't feel like the memo or the guidance coming from the Department of Revenue is allowing me to do that, then I have trouble explaining that to my taxpayers, explaining why one person gets treated one way and another person treated another way. Again, I'll just keep going back to the word fair and equitable. That's what we're supposed to be, is fair and equitable. And some things don't seem to be fair and equitable.
Well, and this is one of those issues that we will likely hear more about, Jeff, as the days move forward, as the session in 2023 creeps closer and closer. This is an issue we'll discuss more with county officials. We'll get in more detail. We'll explain the specifics. But for today, I thought it was important that we raise the issue and explain that the taxpayers elected you and you need to be able to follow a procedure, and the state of Alabama should follow the procedure as well.
I absolutely agreed.
Jeff, thanks very much for visiting with us, for taking a few minutes, and we'll let you get back to work as we approach the conclusion of 2022. Well, now I'll turn our attention to engagement at the national level and Alabama's active role in the part that's played by the National Association of Counties. And Merceria Ludgood, Mobile County Commissioner and a longtime member of the NACO Board of Directors, has joined us. Merceria, it's good to see you today.
Hi, Sonny. Thanks for having me.
Merceria, you have served in a variety of roles at the National Association of County, including the South Region representative on the Executive Committee, and now a member of the Board of Directors, right?
That's right. And I serve on the Board's Audit Committee.
And I think on a couple of other steering committees as well, maybe Workforce Development and the Gulf States, Counties, and Parishes Caucus, right?
I serve on those as well as the Membership Committee and the Task Force on International Economic Development.
What that says to me is that a person as busy as you must see significant value in being engaged at the national level.
I do. For me, my first NACO annual meeting was not memorable. And once I figured out how to navigate it, the entire experience changed. And one of the reasons I joined the membership committee was because I wanted to be a part of the group that was introducing other first-time attendees to how to get maximum benefit from our conferences. But I think the main reason that I'm there is because I learned so much from what people are doing in other parts of the country, whether it's an HR practice, a way to reward our employees, or a program that we may be able to implement, or how a county approached an issue that we may be having. Those are kinds of things that I've just kind of tapped into and unashamedly stolen ideas from counties all over the United States.
Well, and I think what I hear you saying is that the National Association of Counties is just about like every other endeavor in your public life, and that is you get out of it what you put into it, and you've sought out ways to give, and that's given you opportunities to learn from others too, right?
Yes.
Well, you just returned, I think, from a board meeting a little earlier this fall that was just outside Chicago. You serve on the board of directors representing Alabama, as well as Morgan County Commission Chair Ray Long and Sumter County Commission Chair Marcus Campbell. Talk a little bit, if you will, about how a NACO board meeting runs and maybe some of the discussion that occurred at the most recent meeting.
You know, the running joke is that NACO maybe has the largest board of directors in the country. I don't know whether that's true or not, but there's representation from all 50 states. And with that, you bring a lot of different perspectives. You bring a rural perspective, a tribal perspective, a western region with lots of land and few people. You bring the perspective of the counties that have not much land, but a whole lot of people. And I think what happens is because the board is so diverse, what we end up with when we, for example, develop our policy agenda, we get to see how those policies impact every sector and together come up with the policy perspective that's most beneficial for the largest number of counties. And so that's what I like about the board. I also like the fact that even though we typically run in a partisan way, when we do our board deliberations, that's never an issue. And I think that's one of the beauties of NACO altogether, that the partisanship just does not enter. It's what's best for counties. So, for example, in our most recent board meeting, we spent a lot of time talking about what the new Congress is going to look like, what we need to be doing as individual counties to prepare for the change in perspective that you may get with the new Congress, and how we need to be telling our stories, staying in touch with our elected officials, making sure they are aware of what our policy objectives are and how they can help us.
For those who aren't yet active in the National Association of Counties, and especially the new members of the county family, that sounds a lot like what we try to do here in Alabama, involve as many people as possible, as many perspectives as possible. And last year this time, when the National Association of Counties was focused very laser-like on the passage of what we now know as the American Rescue Plan Act, from my time here as executive director, NACO was probably more actively and productively engaged on that piece of legislation than on anything that's been pending before the U.S. Congress in prior years. And as a board member, you were part of the leadership that helped make sure that the county voices were heard on that issue at the national level.
Yes, you're right. The engagement was daily. There were lots of webinars, lots of opportunities for counties to weigh in. They were asking for feedback. And what NACO staff was able to do was to take the questions that we were having all over the country, distilling those questions and getting them to the right people to get answers back so that we were all hearing the same thing and making sure that, if you will, singing from the same sheet of music. I can't imagine the number of hours they had to put in because the legislation was huge and hard to manage. But as it was being forged, pushing to get the best outcome for counties. And I think it was just an extraordinary win for counties that NACO was able to pull that off and to keep us involved, keep us informed about the progress all along the way.
And today, now, as we are in the implementation stage of the American Rescue Plan Act, there's still some uncertain waters in Washington, D.C. There are still some that really aren't convinced that we're utilizing the money in the most productive way. And I know NACO is now actively working to assist counties around the country on that issue as well.
Yes, we're being encouraged to tell our stories. NACO has set up websites, and you could spend days literally trolling through the website looking for places to plug in. But one of the things that they're asking is that we please let them know our stories, the people who are being benefited, how ARPA funds are impacting local communities, local individuals. And all of us, we're doing the great work, but sometimes we just do the work but don't publicize it. We don't elevate it. But NACO is saying to us right now, we must do this because of those detractors, the people who don't believe that we are being, as you said, good stewards. We've got to tell that story, and nobody can do that but us.
That's right. And we're working real hard at that here at the local level in Alabama. And it's important that we all do our part to try to make sure that this program can continue and that we can continue to impact our communities at the local level. I know that there is a conference coming up on the national level in Washington, D.C., February 11 through 14. And it's the National Association's Legislative Conference, a first cousin to the LegCon that we just completed here in Montgomery, which was a great success. And I know you'll be planning to go there. Could you talk a little bit about the benefits of being on the ground in Washington, D.C.?
Well, two things. The obvious one is you are there where your federally elected officials are. You have an opportunity for face-to-face gatherings. For me, it's the place where I go to hear about those federal issues that may impact me sitting right here in Mobile. And I'll give you an example. It was at a NACO conference that I first learned some moves with the flood insurance program that were just going to negatively impact residents here in Mobile County. I knew generally, but it was only there that I was able to get an in-depth understanding of just how bad what was coming down the pike was and what we needed to be doing at a local level to try to forestall some of that. And that was my issue, but you may have a different issue. But that's where you learn those things that are two steps removed. We have a pretty good grasp of what's happening in Alabama and what's going to impact because ACCA keeps us there. Well, similarly, NACO does that for those federal policy issues. And if you're paying attention, you can really find out what's coming that may impact your county.
We look forward to seeing you there. ACCA staff will be attending the conference as well and assisting those that are on site and making sure that we're able to get up to the Hill and see our members of Congress and spread the Alabama County story to Washington, D.C. We're grateful for your service, Commissioner, the leadership role that you play on behalf of Alabama, and we also appreciate you giving us a few minutes today.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
And now the final topic of this month's podcast is a conversation with someone who has county blood that runs very, very deep in his veins. Cal Markert is currently the county manager in Jefferson County, but his history in county government goes all the way back to his childhood. Cal, thanks for joining us for a few minutes this morning.
Hey, good morning, Sonny. It's my pleasure.
And Cal, you're in Jefferson County now, where you've been for the last 5 years or so, just recently named county manager. But you, I think, grew up coming to the association's conferences and conventions, didn't you?
I sure did. A lot of good memories.
Your dad was county engineer, concluding his career in Calhoun, right?
That's correct. He went from Chambers County to Calhoun County.
And everyone who's still active in county government knows the name Charles Markert, as you said, county engineer a long time in Calhoun County, was president of the Association of County Engineers here in our state, was a leader and a voice for us nationally. And so I guess it was just natural that you would become a civil engineer, or did you consider other things?
I did. I kind of knew it'd be engineering. I really was not good at English and spelling and those types of things. So I knew I was kind of gravitating towards something with math and wasn't sure about civil. But as I got closer to college, I really enjoyed the outdoors, I enjoyed building things and seeing things change. And so obviously growing up with Charles and seeing what he did, it seemed perfect. You know, being outdoors, building a bridge, helping people, making life better. That's pretty cool to me.
Well, and you, after college, spent a short period of time at the Alabama Department of Transportation, and you, I think, naturally landed right here in county government, starting in Russell County, where you worked for many years with James McGill. The stories about him are legendary, and I won't ask you to tell any secrets, but after he retired, you were county engineer in Russell County. Can you talk a little bit about that learning experience there?
Yep, I did go to work for the Department of Transportation in Montgomery for about a year or two, and that turned out to be a great experience because I made so many connections, people that have helped me throughout the years. I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. But I was kind of in a cubicle working on some computer stuff, and I just did not enjoy doing that every single day. So I was kind of looking for a county job, and fortunately, Russell County's assistant county engineer came open. And so I jumped on it and took that job. You know, working for McGill was one of my favorite jobs I've ever had. He was bigger than life. He got everything kind of down to what's most important, and that's really helping people. He taught me a lot about what was really important. Yes, he did know how to have a good time, but he kept things in the right perspective. And a lot of people don't know about him. He was funny, and he could talk to anybody. He'd go see the governor or the highway director. But if you were working on the garbage truck, he would stop, give you money, pat you on the back. He just cared about people in a way that really taught me. That's kind of what it's all about.
There's no question about that. Even in this association, James was always a mentor. And I know you learned from him that the important part about being successful in counties is loving people. And then you had a cultural change that I suspect was about as dramatic as any change you could have in Alabama. Moving from being county engineer after James retired in Russell County, you became the director of roads and transportation down in Baldwin County in 2005. It was a little different there than what you faced in Russell County, right?
You are right. It was a lot different. Basically, everything was growing, changing, wide open. Had some really smart, hard-driving commissioners because so much more work going on and issues to tackle. It was extremely challenging.
And because you got bored with all those challenges and didn't have enough, you completed your time there in 2017 and moved to a place that, if it's possible to be going faster and to have more challenges than the fastest growing county in our state, which is Baldwin, you moved to Jefferson County that's embroiled in trying to come out from under the control of a bankruptcy judge. But you shifted away from county engineering after a time, right?
That's correct. I'm a Christian, and if you look at where I'm sitting now, it's really a miracle. I probably don't deserve all the blessings I've been given, but it's been crazy. We moved up here really to get closer to family, and then working for Tony Patelis, who used to be the mayor of Hoover, was really, really good. He was actually similar to McGill in that he was really good decision maker, really good character, but ultimately he cared about people, so that was awesome. I just didn't know he was going to retire so fast. And here I am.
That's right. Now serving as county manager in the largest county in our state, all the way from a young man who grew up in county government, coming to the conferences and conventions with your dad and your brother, who also served and is now retired as county engineer as well. You've put away all the engineering tools and now trying to lead the county from the position of being the lead administrative director for county government in Jefferson County. Is that fun?
You know, it has been fun. We have been able to hire some really good people, and we've got some really good commissioners, and our mission's pretty clear, and that's to kind of grow back out of being in bankruptcy and layoffs and kind of rebuild the county. So the challenges are easy to see, and hopefully we can continue to make progress and being a part of a team to do that.
As you said, the challenges are vast in Jefferson, but the challenges were vast in Russell, and the challenges were vast in Baldwin. County government's mission is the same, right? No matter where you go.
That's exactly right. I mean, in Russell County, Sonny, the issues were dirt roads. It would rain, and people would just literally be stuck in the mud. I remember they had a rock quarry over in Columbus, Georgia, and Florida Rock bought some land right beside the other company. They kind of got into a bidding war, and I talked the commission into buying some dump trucks, and we got a tremendous price on rock for about 2 years because they were trying to bid each other out. And we were able to put gravel on the dirt roads, get people out of the mud, and that was one of the most fun things I've ever done because that was the issues. Baldwin County, they were growing so fast, you had to watch how the development was occurring, how it's going to look in 5 years. 5 years, 10 years, the growth rate was tremendous. And it was just a different set of goals. But again, it was about taking care of the people and making sure things were right and in order. And here, it's kind of the same. It's just a lot more of the same. Traffic, sewer, that kind of thing. Each county has tremendous challenges, and I think being a county engineer, being a county commissioner is one of the hardest things people do, especially now in the age of Facebook. You know, it's so easy to criticize the commissioner's jobs, the county engineer's jobs. Not many people get thanks for it, for doing the right thing. It's not like a college coach. If you can win a game, at least you get some credit, but I think it's a lot of fun.
Well, and clearly it's been a lot of fun for you and an enormously interesting journey. Again, from a person who grew up in county government, and now you sit arguably in the top job in all of county government in Alabama. And Cal, we appreciate your support of the association, not just you, but your staff. The contribution and leadership you provide is essential to us. And we hope you have a great new year up there in Jefferson County.
Man, I appreciate it, Sonny. I wouldn't be here without you, without Mary Pines. I remember y'all have helped me so much through the years, and I encourage our folks here at Jefferson County to get plugged in and get back into some of the courses. It's a tremendous benefit to have a relationship with y'all, to be able to call when you have a problem and share information. And we would not be as good as a state, good a county system as we are without what y'all do and without you, your energy and your care for us and for the growth and the well-being of the counties and the state. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome and you're very kind, Cal. It's been a great career together, and thank you for joining us again. This concludes this month's Two North Jackson podcast, and we look forward to seeing many of you next month as we kick off our annual district meetings around the state. But until then, we wish you a very happy and safe new year.